Accession number 20136, Reel 3.
Alec Milcharek, Reel 3.
Well, after I got to the railway station, we collected our ration and we start moving again. But we stop on a lot other station, you know, even going sideways, you know, you could say it. And while we were going, myself and some friends of mine, we used to go stop on station, some station, and make sure that we were going in the right direction, that train. Because in those days, you could, them train were going in supply for the army near Moscow or whatever, or near front. And they were carrying goods, salt, meat, fish, things like that. What we do, we used to do, get on that train, because there was only one line, so they couldn't go anywhere when there was one line. So they couldn't go, we couldn't miss it. But we might get behind them, they had priority, but we got in their train. And the railway wasn't going in a straight line because there was hills, valleys and all that. So sometimes the railway got a big curve. We used to get on the train and get on the opposite side, you know, say, outside, you could say, because there was always guards, soldiers, you know, with bayonet. Actually, you know, once, you know, they shot and they killed one boy, you know, say, sorry, you know, but what could you do? What we used to do, we tried to find out, you know, place where they get something. Anyway, salt was very favorite because for salt you could get anything. I used to put, you know, try to put my shirt and then tie a bit of rope around my stomach. And two or three of us, when that train was going around the curve, we used to break in either through the roof or open the door. We were prepared, we were carrying, you know, things, you know, so we could open. And you had to be quick because if they catch you, well, they shoot you. So sometimes, you know, so I used to get salt and put it all around me, you know, and then we used to jump off. And then we used to could sell it. Anyway, for a long time, you know, it was going, you know, say, well, you had to live like that because, you know, say, otherwise, you know, you'd be dead. We could exchange for fruit. And we got to a place calling Grunge Mazar. And that was after 71 days that we went on train. So you know how people suffer then. I mean, living, you know, a lot of people die on train. But before we got there, I should tell you that when we left, you know, say, what's his name? Before we got, when we left Kotwas, we were going there. Before we got to Tashkent, there was a town named Sverdlovsk.
This is in the Urals.
After we left Kotwas, you know, there is a town called Sverdlovsk. It's a big town, and Russian let before we got to Sverdlovsk, Russian led a lot of prisoners of war. And they couple in a wagon to our train. When we stop in Sverdlovsk, we opened that wagon because there was a lot of noises coming out. And there was prisoners, they let them out from prison. And they say, you go and join the army, fight for Soviet Russia. And Russian decided, and they were dying, actually, because they had no rations, nobody bothered them, and they were dying. One wagon, complete, you know, people were dying, and it was cold, and it's weird, because at that time. So that train stopped for a day or two, I think, and they took out them people, Russians come in, took out them people, from the wagons, I just dropped them down on ground. When we, you know, say, ask them, you know, say, why are you doing it? They say, oh, well, we've got no time, no men. Summer come, you know, we take care of them. And while we were there, I tried to get some food, you know, in Sverdlovsk. But anyway, I come back to the wagons in the evening, and my mom said, would you go, you know, get some snow or get some water? I said, all right, could I just sit down and rest a little bit? I was tired. She said, all right, then I'll get it. And she ran out, you know, say, from the wagon, just jump off and gather, you know, say, bucket and brought some snow. But it was cold, and she went out with, you know, say, she had nothing on her feet. I said, you shouldn't do it. And my sister said, Mom, you shouldn't do it. Well, anyway, she thawed out that snow, you know, make a drink and all that. And she, you know, say, a couple hours or so after was maybe, you know, maybe longer, she started coughing something terrible. She was very weak, you know, say, well, that would be starving. Anyway, the outcome of it, the next day she was dead. So we notify, you know, say, railway staff. They come in, they took her out, and that's the last we've seen of her. And, well, we couldn't stop there. They wouldn't let us anyway. Some others, you know, I suppose they were here eventually.
That was a Sverdlovsk.
Sverdlovsk, yeah. But we continue, you know, to carry on. And anyway, we come to a place called Grunsh Mazar. That was in Uzbekistan. We come in evening. They told us to get off the train. And they put us, there was a place for travelers. Not very big, but there was enough, you know, for people who got off the train. Some people went a bit further on. I don't know where. Anyway, they gave us, well, we had to buy, actually, if you get money, something to eat, that place. And next day, they took us to sovkhoz, that means government farm, and cotton government farm. But we had our own lives, but on that place, in Grunsh Mazar on station, everybody got another dose, you know, say, Uzbekistan's, you know, say, lives. And it was terrible. When we got to that place, we put all our clothes, you know, say, it start washing, you know, say, and tried to, you know, get rid of that lice. We got rid of some of it, but not all of it. Anyway, we had to go to work. I was told to go and carry with some other people cotton from the fields to the main road. And that's supposed to trucks come in and take it, whatever, to fab, to, well, I don't know where. And cotton, working with cotton, it's a horrible job. Because, you know, say, we used to have to cut about, carry about 5 miles. And cotton, when it's dry, when it's cut, the flower opens and it spikes there. And the cotton is still there. But they don't take it, you know, cotton out. That goes to, I don't know, machine do it or whatever, they, whoever does it, threshing or whatever. But we had to cut it on our backs. I only had a shirt. I didn't even have a bag, you know, so I could put underneath. You make a bundle of cotton and carry it on your back to the road, 5 kilometers. My back was nothing, you know, say, and everybody else's. Blasted blood, you know, say, covered in blood, and flies comes in and always suffer something terrible. Anyway, in that office, in that sovkhoz, there was one Polish Jew, but he came before us. I don't know where he got to know, but news travel in unexpected places. He told us that there is another town down about 50 kilometers or maybe less, Andijan, and there is Polish mission, or what you could say it, and sometimes if they got it, they give you, you know, a bit of sugar or a bit of food or flour or things like that, something, or corned beef or whatever. Well, next day I was on the way there to Andijan to get ready and get some of it. I got to the station at Grunj Mazar. It was about 25 kilometers, I suppose 30 maybe. You know, I walked there. But being citizen and having only identity card or third or fourth category, I wasn't allowed to go on train. I wasn't allowed to buy a ticket. So what I used to do, I was smart when you live, you know, say like that. You know what, how to go about it. So I didn't go on station. I go way back, you know, and look, true enough, this the trains going by, but mostly, you know, army using them. There was no civilian train. I didn't see one, you know, there may be civilian one, but mostly army truck, you know, with men from Siberia, you know, say, and going, or from Far East, you know, say, going to fight for Moscow, for, you know, going towards the front. And cattle and pigs, you know, maybe chicken or so. So I watched them, and I used to sneak in on train and go to Andijan. I got there, I got out of the train, but it was evening then. Well, no, I bought myself, you know, say, take kipiatok, that's hot water. I drank that. Well, in the evening, no point going to looking for that Polish place. I said, I have to have a place to sleep somewhere. But there was big station, so I go right out to the outskirts of that station. There is still some wagons there, cattle trucks. And I remember the moon was shining, so I opened the door. Actually, it was open, it wasn't locked. So I get in, there is some straw in far end, so I get underneath, and I go to sleep. I don't know, well, so something woke me up, somebody crying or so. I like quiet. Listen, I hear a woman crying, and chap, you know, say, come on, let's have it, let's have it. She said, that's all I have, I got a drebionka, I got a baby, you know. I didn't know what they were talking about, but I know now that she was a prostitute, and there was some woman. She brought him to the train, you know, and they had what they had to do. And then he wanted money as what she got, you know. I don't know, she maybe, you know, she been had some money or not, saved enough to show it to him. Well, I stayed quiet for a little while in case they return, and then I went, it was nearly morning, and I made my way towards the town. I had to, you know, cross the railway lines, but I sneaked it through without anybody stopping me, and I tried to find a Polish mission there. I found it. They were slightly out of town on the other side, actually, long walk. Anyway, they gave me some food, so I was ready to go back to our place, where, you know, the suffers, that plantation, you know, same place. But before I left, somebody, the Polish mission, said, we are recruiting men and women. You know, said there is going to be a Polish army in Russia because General Sikorsky made treaty with Stalin, you know, say, and now we are allowed to make, you know, say, start Polish army again. So I said, all right. Anyway, I went back to my sisters, brought them food. They cry, you know, say, because they were so happy. Never seen sugar for donkeys, you know, and that was really treat. But I thought I'll go again and I'll ask him, you know, say a bit more question. But mainly, I thought perhaps I get some more food from them. So I soon, you know, a couple of days or so or afterwards, I thought, well, I'm get ready to go again to Andijan. So I went to the railway station, Grunj Mazar. I sneak on other side, because train going to Andijan, you know, you had to cross the line. And I thought, you know, say, I watch, you know, for train going to Andijan, and I sneak in on the train and go. It was early morning. There was, not far from station, it was all sand, you know, it was in it was desert country. Not far from that station, it was some Uzbek village. And I lie behind, you know, say grass. Some grass was growing there. So I lie behind in case somebody was watching from railway station. So I didn't want to be seen. And I see from that village some men or women, because Uzbek, you know, say, wear them long clothes, you know, say like kaftans, whatever you called it. move from that village and slowly goes, don't come in towards me, but he moved towards the railway station first and then start moving towards me. Mm-hmm. I got worried a little bit. I thought, well, if it's policeman or somebody, he can arrest me, you know, and well, that will be the end of my journey to Andijan. Anyway, he started moving slowly towards me, and I look, and I find out it was old Uzbek, you know. And he come towards me, and then when he come close, you know, he said, don't worry, son, Marchishka, he said, you know, don't worry, son. He said, what are you doing here? He said, you can tell me, you know, say, roughly I'm on your side. I said, well, I'm trying to go to Andijan. I said, but I haven't got any money, and they won't send me a ticket anyway. He said, are you hungry? I said, well, actually, you know, I am. I didn't have any, you know, nothing to eat. He said, all right then, hang on a bit. He said, stay here. And off he went. The train going all the time. Actually, there was nothing that I like it, you know, fancy to get on anyway. But he said, I thought he might bring me some bread or maybe, you know, meat or something like that. You never know. Anyway, he comes, you know, soon, well, I don't know, half an hour, because he was old, he was walking very slowly, and he carries something, you know, wrapped in rugs or whatever. And he brings here, he said, well, he said, I haven't got any food. He said, because, you know, say, I'm hungry myself. He said, you know, say, the Russian don't, you know, look after us. He said, you look at the village. He said, look at the houses. Actually, it was not houses, but the mud huts, you know, they used to be. He said, see them holes in them. He said, well, just before the war, this Russian, you know, said, try to pacify us, as, you know, say, make us, you know, like Russians. And they brought artillery and shot a lot of people. Them holes, you know, that's what Russian done. So he said, I don't like him. Anyway, he said, there is some records. He said, one or two, you know, say, new ones. He said, go to, when you get to Andijan, before you get there, he said, jump off the train, or you have to walk back. On left-hand side, there is marketplace. Go there. You can ask some people there, you know, say, working there, what to do. They're nice people, they tell you. And you can sell them. And you will have money, you know, say, to buy food.
You mean gramophone records?
Yeah. Right. It was about, I don't know, 25, 30, I can't remember exactly how many. I get there. I jump off that train before I get there. Actually, I saw it from the train. And I go back to that market. And I stood and watched. And true enough, people coming in, bringing, you know, say, vegetables, milk, and bread. And their bread, it wasn't like bread. It was bread, you know, say, you pour it in, very thin one, you pour it in form, and you bake it on fire, you know, say, it's not bread, but well, it is bread, kind of. It's called lepioshki. And so I stood there, watched that, and then I see the chap, first one there. He was selling books, actually. I went to him, you know, I speak Russian perfect, and you know, so I said, you know, I got some records I would like to sell, you know, say, to buy some bread or something to eat. He said, well, nobody's stopping you. He said, just pick up your place, start shouting, you know, and if people like your records or in need of records, you know, say, well, you are in business. He gave me actually a box, a wooden timber wall, but he said, stand on that, you know, a bit higher, you know, so, you know, people notice you more. So I get on that box, put them records in front of me, and I start shouting, records, best ones, you know, say, well, some of them fresh from Moscow yesterday. I don't know if they believe it or not. Anyway, nobody buys them. I don't know, 10 minutes, quarter an hour, nobody buys them. I thought, well, shall I check them in and go and see if I can pinch something to eat? And then, you know, say, women with a couple bags, you know, two children, walking, young women, quite pretty. He said, what records you got? I said, whoa, you just have a look. He said, only the best. You know, say, friend of mine, you know, send me from Moscow. Bit of lying, never, you know, hurt anybody. So she started looking then. She said, she picked up a couple, you know, and she said, well, yeah, that They're pretty new. I don't know how old they were, you know, so they were pretty new because they had labels and everything, and look new, and covers, you know. I said, how much? I didn't know how much to say, you know. I said, don't putting too high price, otherwise, you know, she won't buy. So I said, well, all right, ruble and a half. Oh, she said, it's a lot of money. I said, well, they, you know, anywhere else, it costs more. Anyway, she paid that ruble and a half. They took my, you know, almost two best ones, you know, and off she goes. And she was a lucky one. You know, within, well, quarter an hour, I'm on my last, you know, say, four or five records. So I put price up accordingly, even they were old ones. You know, I got money in my pocket. I said, well, I'm not hungry today. And true enough, I sold all them records. I bought myself, you know, some sour milk, some that El Pioschi, the bread. And off I went to Andijan. I went to that Polish place. Sure enough, they said, you again? I said, well, yes. He said, my sister's still hungry. Well, they laughed. They know, you know, how it was, you know. I said, but on the other hand, you know, say, I would like to join it, but how do you go about it? You know, say, could you explain it to me proper? So he said, well, there is one or two, you know, say, places you could join, but the nearest one, it's a place called Jalalabad. It's along the line from Andijan. No, it's about 100 or so miles, or maybe more. I said, well, I have to go to Grunj Mazar. He said, oh, yeah, that's along the line. Well, it's about 70, 80 kilometers from Grunj Mazar. Anyway, they gave me dry fruit and something else. And so I'm getting trained back. And I off, you know, to Grunj Mazar and home to that Sofos, to see my sister. I bring that fruit, they, you know, say, cry a bit again. And I said, well, that my end, you know, of my work here, you know, say, in this cotton plantation. And the next day, off I go. I go to Grunj Mazar on railway station, going opposite from Andijan, going towards China's border, actually, and you could go to Far East to China, or on the same line, a long way, you know, on the railway. Anyway, I get to railway station, Grunj Mazar. I wait, and it's about, I suppose, well, 10 o'clock, or maybe getting towards midway, train come in. But somehow or other, the train looks different to me. I wait, you know, say, quite a bit of the station, because train were so long ones, you know. But that train looks practically new. And instead of cattle trucks, the trains, wagons practically new. And instead of troops or goats or cattle, you know, that is people, you know, say, women, children. Anyway, beggars can't be choosers. I jump practically, you know, say, well, not quite center, but near the center. As I got on the train, I knew I got on the wrong train. I see people well-dressed, you know, say, and they got, you know, say, practically everything, you know, they playing music on gramophones and unheard of, you know, in Russia in that time. But I stood by the wagon separate, and, you know, say, you could walk between them, but there is door sometimes, you know, but mostly they were open. And I just stood on a side there. You know, there was a corridor, you know, say, on one side, near the side, and wagons, you know, their living quarters. So I stood there so nobody could see me, or nearly nobody, and I watched what it is going. And then I noticed two men, big, strong chaps. I knew it right away, secret police, NKVD. And they're going from wagon to wagon, or talking to people on corridor, and they showing their identity cards or whatever. And the worst part of it, they're getting near me. So I start going, I thought they didn't see me, I tried to move another wagon forwards toward the engine. Anyway, it goes on for an hour or so, the last wagon come, and the engine, you know, in front of me. I had to think quick what to do. And I noticed that they noticed me, you know, because they started laughing and showing something, you know, towards me. But I was well-dressed on Russian standards there, you know. And I stood there just before you got to the engine, and that last wagon, doors open, and quite nice women, about 30s, I suppose, come out, and she looks through the window, whatever, you know, going on, and there was nothing, desert, actually. And behind there, you know, in doorway stood young girl, 15, I don't know, 14, 16, quite pretty, nicely dressed, unusual. And that oldest woman, she said something to mother, but I didn't care. Anyway, the mother, the lady, you know, say, looked, and she's, you know, turned back and went, shut the door. She shut the door. I said, well, that's my chance only. I knock, she shut the door, not quite. I knock on the door. Nothing happened. I knock it again. And that lady, you know, say, open the door a little bit. She said, yes, what do you want? I decided it's only truth or nothing. So I said, well, I'm trying to get to Andijan. He said, because, you know, say, I tried to join Polish army. And, you know, say, there is two NKVD there. You know, say, if they catch me, they're following, you know, say, you know, me or making, you know, say, control check or whatever. And if they catch me, you know, they check me out of train. You know, I will be killed probably. I said, could you just put me there, you know, say, for a second or so till they, you know, come back, you know. The young girl say, don't mother. That lady said, be quiet. And I practically hear them, you know, say, walking them to encounter the police, you know, say, you could hear it because it was metal shreds, you know, all along the corridor. She opened the door, let me in, and there is a little curtain, you know, say, on left-hand side. And she said, get there. I said, not a word. So I go there in that cupboard. She pulled that curtain. I remember to put my feet back so you don't stick out. And practically same, by the time she closed the door, you know, say, there is a knock on the door. And then two chaps, they say, hello. Now say, and who are you, lady? You know, say, and full of beans, and they try to get in. And she said, hang on, never mind who am I. He said, who are you? They say, well, they say, you know, they police, you know, they do making check. He say, well, there is nobody here and nothing I can do for you. He said, so you better shut the door and buzz off. They say, lady, no. Say, who are you? She told them name. It was name of somebody in Russian government. In Moscow, what it was at that time, Germans were right near Moscow, practically taking it, but not they never did take it. And that was government evacuees, top, you know, say, Russian people. They were going, I don't know where they were going, you know. There was another line, the way the train was going, so they could go anywhere. But I didn't see the face of them, but I could hear the difference in their voices. When she told them who she was, I thought they were blessed, go on their knees and do, you know, kiss her hand or whatever. Sorry, lady. Sorry, Barinia. Sorry. Say, yeah, one and another. She said, "You. I hope you don't mind us, you know, say, we only been doing our job, our duty. She said, we're supposed to, you know, see that nobody. And we saw, you know, young boy, and where is he? She said, well, I don't know. Don't ask me. And she was quite nasty with them. And she said, I don't want you standing waiting here outside my door again. You buzz off, she told him. And off they went with tail between their legs. And when they shut the door, just a minute or two passed, she pulled the curtain just a little bit, and she said, wait a second. And we could hear it, you know, say, them policemen going back, you know, say, on their hobnail boots, you know, and on that metal corridor. You know,